protection of their attack vehicles and had begun trying to free the tires and tracks when Mateo and the office opened fire. Their armor hadn't survived the combined firepower. I counted 4 humans on the ground, unmoving. The mini-tank was rocking back and forth on its track system. The tank was heavily armored, was handled by a human, and had a missile system mounted on top. With Mateo down and the office defenses on standby until the batteries recharged, I needed to damage or immobilize the missile system. I also needed to knock out any drones they brought. If the Spot's tank got free, it had firepower the office couldn't withstand without the particle shields up, and the mini tank was small enough to maneuver around the aisles and find stuff it shouldn't. I needed more power faster. The office system's shields and the USSS Sunstar's power sigi could be seen from space if military satellites were currently actively looking for it. But I didn't have a choice. I checked the batteries. Still too low. I cursed foully. Tufts looked at me and flicked her ear tabs, amused. Jolene said nothing. I really don't want to do this. I didn't have implants to interact directly with the ship, so this was not going to be fun at all. Taking a deep breath, I pulled off my armored sleeve and shoved my hand into the engineering command sleeve, screaming, wordless, knowing what was coming. The sleeve contracted around my hand fast, painfully tight. Needles punctured into me and engaged my nervous system. It hurt. It bloody well hurt. My scream went up in pitch. My breath shuddered as I forced myself to accept the pain and the input and the sensory overload. I was damaging my arm. I was bleeding. I would deal with the injury later.
That wasn't the brightest thing you ever done, darling.
I grunted. I increased the WIMP production and shunted more power to the office batteries. I could power up the office defense system and the AG grabber. Or I could use some of the scamp power to launch the office's other RVACs now and take longer to get the systems up and running. I needed intel. I launched the flying drones and set them to auto-scan. The office went into brownout again. Now I had 102 seconds until I had sufficient power transferred to activate the weapons and the grabber. I hoped the intel was worth it. Melded with Jolene, I pressed my eyes against the command faceplate showing me the ship's external sensors as the AI searched the skies. I spotted 1 enemy drone, locked on. Sliding my bleeding hand to the left, I engaged the weapons array that was least likely to draw satellite attention. I fired. Silently, the ship's Entnu-based offensive laser array took it down. Gomez said, "Alert. Armed incursion from the western boundary. 6 on foot." I pulled up the office cameras and spotted the 6-man team, armed with automatic rifles, making their way into an older section of the yard. The scrap there backed up to a series of mine cracks, the main one wider than most, and 100 meters deep or more. The rock there was rotten, hundreds of unstable cracks forming when an old underground mine had caved in. I had scanned the area once and found traces of arsenic, benzene, and toxic coal dust. I hadn't bothered to explore further. I had no idea what the invading team might be after. "Do not engage," I told Gomez. "Maintain observation via RVACs and stationary camera system. For now, I let the invaders go, curious what they were looking for. Or maybe that was Jolene's curiosity. It was already hard to tell as her sensors merged with my senses.
"You need to let me merge fully with the extra ship defensive system you're using, darling. This 3-way we're having is not working for me."
Again, the accent threw me, but I let her merge into the office AI.
"Oh my. Ain't you just the cutest little thing?"
Jolene said to the AI.
"Gomez, nice name. Your English translated coding ain't the best or the brightest, but a lonely gal sometimes has to make do."
"Flirt later," I muttered. Far faster than I could have before, my mind slipped into the office vid scanners and checked around. There were more strangers in the junkyard, these close to the office. Two humans were at the rear office airlock. I fired everything I had at them. They went down. I slid through the screen, searching for more movement. In the aisles, two cats were down and in pieces. I checked Mateo. He was still down. Eight puffers were down near his suit, but as I watched, a puffer pried apart an ankle seam in one of the three fully automated warbot legs. A second puffer fired a small caliber weapon into the Under Armour, round after round. "No," I whispered. I counted 18 rounds, a full mag for the puffer. The first puffer rolled back and tore into the opening. They were working together. That was freaky. "Now that ain't normal," Jolene said. "Puffers talking? Dang. Next thing you know, they'll be having teen crumpets." I had no idea what a crumpet was. It sounded like a good name for an insect, one I'd squash beneath my foot. Both puffers crawled into the hole. The suit's auto-defense system came on. Jolene said, "Fully segmenting warbot suit, isolating puffers." There was nothing I could do to help my friend. Not from here. Not until the threat was averted and I could get to him. Then I'd dig the puffers out and bash them open and stick them under the AG grabber. "Good plan," I muttered to myself. But my heart was clenching. I'd found Mateo in a nearby town on the way here when I was alone and terrified. He had been half disabled, in the city lockup, behind bars. Somehow he was able to act as the city manager's AI and right-hand man, paid in nothing but food, minimal power for his suit, and devil milk. He was addicted and ignored. And forced to work, deprived of the devil milk if he refused even the smallest command. No one had known it, but his suit had also been infected with puffer nanobots, and the critters had been eating him and the suit, cell by cell. Mateo had been fighting a losing battle with them for months. I had rescued him. Stolen him, actually. Right out from under the city manager's nose. Had brought him to the scrapyard and stripped what was left of him out of the warbot suit and stuck him into the med bay. Saved his life. Now, my friend was in danger from puffers again. His worst nightmare. And I couldn't protect him. "How long can you keep the puffers in that segment of the suit?" I asked Jolene.
"You'll need to hit him, his entire suit, and especially that limb with anti-grav sometime in the next 18 hours, sweetie pie."
It flashed through my mind that Jolene knew how to kill nanobots, which was unexpected. Before I could ask, she went on.
"The puffer nanobots are already chewing into that leg segment and converting the base components to weapons. Them scary little suckers are a new version. They ain't the puffers I got in my database."
I didn't know where Jolene got the programming for the Southern accent, but it was becoming jarring. Jolene was one of Pop's songs. Had Kayet gotten into his music and somehow made the transition to Jolene? I made a mental note to change the voice to a male baritone with a nice Welsh accent.
"You try it and I'll zap you," Jolene said. "I was given permission to choose my own gender-based pronouns, name, voice, and wardrobe by the CO, and I ain't giving that up."
"Wardrobe?"
"Fine," I said, shaking my head at the vagaries of AIs. And then I realized she had heard my thoughts, which was way above Kayet's abilities. It was freaky scary.
"Use vocals only," I said. Jolene uttered a, "Huh." I scanned the screens and saw movement near the grabber. Battery levels were at 89%. Using remote access, I powered the grabber and activated it. The AG sucked two humans into the air where they hung like magician's helpers.
"Look, Ma, no strings," I said.
"Spiffy," Jolene said.
Tufts chuffed. I looked back at Mateo, still unmoving. Damn. Damn,
In a blare of light, the junkyard office came online, its offensive weapons fired. The Sunstar's floor shook. Things fell out of the ceiling tiles and peppered over me. The office fired again. A human sprinting toward its front from the entrance road danced and died as she was cut in two. Seemed Jagger had woken up and decided to defend us. I double-checked that Gomez had his more private defenses locked down, so only the modified, retrofitted U.S. military systems would be available to my visitor. I slid through the system and into the office's internal cameras. Jagger was propped in the space-worthy, oversized NBP compression seat, my command seat, scanning the yard. With a thought, I removed the ship's sensors from his access. If he spotted me, he would think I was using a remote cubby somewhere on the property, not a spaceship command seat display. "He's a pretty one," Jolene said. "You doing him?" I checked to make sure Jagger couldn't hear her.
"No, not that it's any of your business."
"Shame. That's a nice piece of eye candy.
The invaders launched another drone, darling. You want me to take it down?"
"Affirmative."
The new drone crashed and disintegrated. Tufts nudged me, and I looked directly into her eyes. She dropped her leaf-green gaze to my lap. My blood had puddled there, was still dripping, where the ship's engineering command sleeve had stuck its sensors into my arm. A throbbing pain had taken over my arm, shoulder, across my back, and up into my head where the ache bloomed into a migraine.
"Yeah, I'm bleeding," I said to her. "It hurts to defend this place."
"It wouldn't have if you had all your implants," Jolene said,
her tone stern and reproachful, and way more human than an AI of her make, model, and age should be. "Stop fussing at me."
"Where the hell are you?"
Jagger asked. He had heard me. The invader's mini-tank broke free. With a series of overlapping, augmented thoughts, I calculated my options and latched onto the closest of the junkyard's RVACs. I dived the RVAC at the mini-tank's missile system, counting off seconds. The tank carried three small, specialized warheads, but all I needed to do was disable the firing mechanism or targeting system. Fortunately, the SPOTS tanks were older models, and firing and targeting were side by side. The RVAC slammed into the mini-tank roof and took out or damaged everything on top. Pieces flew, even without it being a weaponized drone. Too bad they cost an arm and a leg.
"Nice shot, honey lamb," Jolene said.
"I'm on the property," I murmured in response to Jaeger's question. "Oh, looky," I said, as a human got out of the first TAC vehicle and strode down the drive. I shared the screen with Jagger. The bearded man was huge, and he was wearing a headset with dual earbuds. Jolene and I tapped into his comms system.
"How deep?"
he asked someone on his end.
86 meters at the access point," a female voice said. "Reading power output and steady sensor activity."
I slid my awareness into the remaining RVAC and hovered over the six-man team. They were near the back of the property, at the massive mine crack. There was nothing back there. Nothing at all, unless I had missed something.
"McElvey will be pleased," the bearded man said.
Kate said into my ear,
"Possible name match. McElvey, Irvin E. General, Combined Military Command, retired at my last update."
I said to the office AI, "Gomez, initiate a background search into finances and current location of McElvey, Irvin E., General. Look for anything that relates to us, or the OMW, or the MS Angels."
"Executing search. Authorization requested to expand parameters," Gomez said.
"Affirmative, as needed," I said, watching as the big man strode up the drive.
"Can I help?" Kate asked. "That sounds like fun."
"Knock yourself out." I opened up comms through the office speakers. "Jagger, you know this guy?"
"Yeah.
He's the East Coast enforcer for the MS Angels. He travels with enough equipment, firepower, and warriors to take down small cities. And it looks like he brought his entire armament and forces with him. Just for you. Or something he wanted at the back of the property, where nothing was except certain death in the mine cracks. I initiated a full scan for communication access and found an electronic crack I could use, though it was mostly only defensive sensors and suit readouts. I turned off access to Gomez so Jaeger couldn't hear me. Kate, Jolene. I held in my frustration. Right. Jolene. You, the command center, engineering, the frontal sensor array, and two of your hull weapons arrays crashed here 11 years ago. 10 years, 10 months, 20. Stop. Request minimal information in response to questions, I said. Jolene stopped talking. I asked a question. One I had never asked before, had never thought to ask. Are there other parts of the spaceship Sunstar on the ground?
Affirmative.
Where?
Please provide parameters.
Now Jolene was just being snarky. Within 10 kilometers.
Affirmative.
I watched the big man stop. He was behind a skid full of heavy equipment, looking at the remains of the woman lying on the stone. He was in range for the office weapons, but if I took him out now, I might not figure out what was going on. On another RVAC screen, the six-man team at the back of the property reached the unstable ground. Two of the team stumbled, and one tumbled into the ground and disappeared. There was a lot of scrambling around as a woman crawled away from the crack. The others secured climbing and rescue ropes and went down after the man. His suit readouts were redlining from panic, but they didn't indicate a major injury. Sadly. Within 1 kilometer, I asked Jolene.
Affirmative.
That might explain some things, I said, mostly to myself, watching as the team struggled to get the panicked man back to the surface. What ship parts are within 1 kilometer?
I can only provide information on wreckage that has functioning sensors and that send out pings to my systems.
Jolene sounded snippy.
Yeah, fine.
What parts?
Stern weapons array, port weapons array, starboard weapons array, ship personnel backup WIMP systems, ship personnel quarters, redundant WIMP MPP propulsion and power system, redundant AI backup system. There may be other ship wreckage within that radius, but if so, they are no longer capable of sending out pings.
Jolene, send me coordinates for all wreckage that still sends out pings, on or within one click of the property. Pinpoint them on a 3D map. Jolene did. The wreckage appeared on a screen. It was all near the current position of the small expedition team, but all the wreckage's vertical coordinates were closer to sea level than we were. Bugger. They're in the crack.
Affirmative.
Other things came clear to me, as if a low-lying fog shrouding my brain began to blow away. Oh. The crack in the ground was made by the back half of the ship crashing directly above an old mine. Correct?
Affirmative.
And the Sunstar's AI had known all this for over a decade. And we hadn't known or. Other things began to resolve out of the fog of my brain. When I first arrived here, there had been no Mayday alert going out on the Sunstar's new comms system. It was only when Mateo had been healed and put back in his suit that he had gone searching through the junkyard and had discovered the spaceship. Like, right away. Mateo had figured out how to get inside a space-going warship within hours. He hadn't needed to display any automatic alerts or distress signals. They had already been off. I had assumed Pops was the one who had turned it all off. But what if it hadn't been my father? What if someone else had been here?
And then Jolene's comment about pings burrowed through my brain.
List all forms of pings and alerts that went out when the Sun Star was in distress, when the Sun Star crashed and... my unease spread. Any that continue today. On the screen, the invading team pulled the man to safety. Debris crashed from the lip into the massive crack in the earth, an avalanche of boulders and rock. The man said he had crapped his pants. Everyone else thought that was funny. Jolene said,
my program and broadcast Maydays through standard and new channels until Mayday was disabled at 2 minutes, 47 seconds post-crash landing. Pan-Pan was sent out on standard and new and radio waves. Pan-Pan was disabled at 2 minutes, 52 seconds after crash landing. SOS was sent out on automatic recurring radio wave broadcast. SOS on primary AI was disabled at 3 minutes, 4 seconds post-crash. SOS from AI backup continues, with limited range due to massive particle and WIMP particle emissions.
Bloody damn, I whispered. EntNew was the engineering hardware and tech that comprised the instantaneous communication system based on entangled dark neutrinos, particles that passed through anything and didn't seem to be bound by unimportant things like gravity or matter or the speed of light. EntNew had been discovered in 2025, and it had been used extensively by the military during the war, in space. It worked for any currently measurable distance, and there was no way, no reason at all, that it should have been turned off. Ever. Especially not at 2 minutes, 47 seconds after crash landing, with the crew all away safely, and no deaths to report. And Pan-Pan should never have been sent. It was the International Standard Urgency Signal that declared a vessel had an urgent situation, but not an immediate danger to the crew's survival or to the vessel itself. The ship had been crashing, which seemed like a pretty immediate danger to me, and someone sent a Pan-Pan along with a Mayday. And part of the SOS was still going. Can you disable the SOS?
That is within my capabilities, darling.
Definitely annoyed. Can you disable all forms of emergency transmissions, including automatic pings?
Disabling emergency transmissions is within my capabilities.
More annoyed. I waited. Nothing happened. Have you disabled emergency transmissions?
Negative.
I wanted to bang my head. Why not?
Ship AI, Kate, current, moniker, Jolene, does not have an order to disable all transmissions.
And now she sounded a little malicious and a lot like she was pushing my buttons. Ship AI Kayet, current moniker Jolene, I ground out. Disable SOS emitting from backup AI. Disable all ping transmissions.
Disabling SOS and ping transmissions requires CO's authorization.
Just pushing my buttons. Sarcastic, snide, spiteful, and enjoying it all. Requires CO's authorization. That bad feeling that had been hanging around pierced directly into my heart. CO was the commanding officer, the captain of the ship. All those fog-shrouded possibilities came blindingly clear. I remembered the access number set up by Mateo, giving me right of entry to Sunstar. Mateo, who had been found only a few kilometers from here as the crow flies. How bloody damn convenient. Mateo, who had been attacked by puffer nanobots inside his warbot suit. It wasn't even a guess. And I was so utterly stupid to not have figured this out already. That was why the ship crashed. It had been infected by puffers and nanos. After it crashed, it had been hit with AG particles from its own engines, which killed the nanos, and then the ship had been left here, hidden in plain sight on the junkyard property. Only one person other than me, and Jolene knew that anti-gravity WIMP particles killed mech nanos, and that other person had taught me how it was done. It was Mateo who had figured out how to kill them. By accident. When his ship crashed. My brain put together facts and guesses, and I said, "Authorization Mateo, Captain CO4816 Alpha Tango Delta."
"All emergency transmissions are disabled," Jolene said.
"Son of a bitch," I whispered.
"Shame on you. Listen to that nasty tongue."
Mateo was the commanding officer of the USSS Sunstar. Puffers had gotten into his ship. He had gone down with it, wearing a warbot. And he had gotten away, probably not knowing he had mech nanobots inside with him. By the time he realized what was wrong with his suit, he was enslaved by the sheriff of Boone County, West Virginia. The puffer nanobots in his suit had been a problem he couldn't deal with. You couldn't put a person under WIMP anti-gravity for long without some serious brain scrambling, not that he had access to an AG. He had fought the nanobots as they ate him, cell by cell, piece by piece. The puffers had nearly killed him before I showed up and brought him back here where he repaired the grabber, crawled from his suit and let the grabber kill the nanos. And I had put what was left of him in the medbay to heal as much as possible. The back half of Captain Mateo's ship was in the mine crack, still emitting WIMP dark energy particles. And he never told me. On the screen, the big man, who had stood next to a skid, moved, racing for the office airlock. Moved fast. Jaeger fired. Fixed artillery, a well-grouped barrage, and somehow bearded guy wasn't hit. Bloody hell, he was augmented, had to be. On another screen, the first guy from the team of six at the mine crack began to rappel down into the earth. The bearded guy began applying the bright purple third-generation malleable explosives to the airlock seal. Military stuff. Somehow, he was managing to stay to the side of the weapons array that protected the airlock. "Jaeger," I said.
"I see him. Gimme. Gimme. Now."
He fired a pulse weapon. Bearded guy went down in a splatter of boiling blood and viscera.
"Direct hit. Wonder where he got a pulse weapon," Jolene asked. "Not bad shooting there. But that butt? He's a keeper."
Ship AIs got over snits fast, it seemed. Tufts bumped my nose with a paw and said,
"Meep."
I had forgotten she was there.
"I don't know what."
Tufts put her nose against mine. Her whiskers brushed like cat kisses, and she leaned in more, her forehead to mine. Everything she was seeing and smelling and hearing and feeling skittered into me and took over, a cross-sensory experience that slapped me with a severe case of vertigo.
"Guardian cat."
Not words, but a concept I gleaned from her thoughts and feelings. Tufts was a guardian cat, like a title, like queen. My perceptions shifted, and I was inside several things. Creatures. Cats. Smelling the stench of gasoline, oil, old metal, decaying rubber, decaying hemp, live rats, dead rats, and invading humans. Some still alive. Some protein. Seeing in strange greens and silvers, much clearer than my own vision. Less orange. Hearing metal settling, electronics buzzing, human invaders running, voices in the background, feeling sun-heated metal beneath paws, dirt and stone beneath bellies. Two cats were near the back airlock, standing guard over two others that were badly injured. Two more were dead, ripped apart by puffers, left to grow stiff and stinking of death. There were no humans back there. Tufts bumped me harder,
I knew what she wanted. Somehow, I knew.
Punching my connection to the office, I said, "Jaeger, open the rear airlock and pull in the two cats. Put them in the med bay. Set it to triage so it can diagnose and treat them both."
"I happen to approve, but you're low on medical supplies," he said.
"Yeah, supplies. That were hard to replace these days. But they were my cats. Bloody damn hell." Tufts put her nose to mine again. I saw through the watching cat's eyes as the injured ones were lifted and carried inside, one cat in each of Jaeger's arms. As the door was closing, both of the watcher cats leaped in, tails pulled in tight to keep from getting caught in the closing seal. My vision went with them, flying in the air. One leaped across Jaeger, paws pushing off from his back. Jaeger cursed. I breathed out a huff of amusement. In a swirling, shifting visual transfer, I was staring at the invading team, four of them gone down into the crack, the remaining two leaning against a skid of chrome bumpers, vaping something noxious. The view shifted again, and I was smelling and tasting the raw meat a half dozen cats were feasting on at the front airlock. Bearded guy and the woman who died first were both a hit with the felines. No need to waste protein, I thought. Though they were not eating their own compatriots who were growing stiff with rigor, so some protein was more respected than other protein. Tufts thought a concept at me that translated vaguely as, "We do not eat our people." Which meant cats were people to her, but humans were not. Okay. Another concept translated as, "Ambush invaders in crack." And then I tasted my blood and realized Tufts was lapping up the blood that had pooled across my legs, and I was tasting it in her mouth. Guess that means I'm not her people. Tufts didn't disagree. The blood, filled with fresh biomech nanos, meant that Tufts and I were more firmly bonded and merged than when she had lived with me after I healed her in the med bay. Back then, she had slept in my bed. We had touched. Too much. Back before I knew much about what I had become and that I could infect anything with a blood supply. "Stop drinking my blood," I told her, trying to push her away with my free hand. She dodged my hand, ignoring me. "You're going to be more bonded to me." She ignored me some more. Damn cat. Tufts lifted her head and looked at the next screen, making the meep sound again. Odd with my blood on her lips. "Jolene," I said, "human invaders are attempting to access the portions of your ship that are down in the crack. Did CO Mateo leave protocols intact to protect weapons arrays and AI backup?" "Affirmative," she snapped, sounding less AI and more severely irritated human. "If you want to rescind your order to only answer with minimal info, we can chat about that." More human. I thought about all the parts of the Sunstar I had touched when I came inside that very first time. My sweat on the controls, my breath circulating through the ship systems. When I survived the Mama Bot, my bio-nanos had converted mech nanos to their own purposes inside me. All those mixed nanos were everywhere, inside the Sunstar. Bloody hell. What had I done? No wonder Jolene sounded so different. And now? My blood in the sleeve would make it much worse. "Consider the order rescinded and my apologies offered," I said, hearing the sadness in my tone through Tuff's ears. "Is there something like auto defenses that will take care of the invaders?"
"Affirmative. Would you like me to twist their tails for info first or just shoot them dead?"
They were MS Angels. My enemies. And they had killed Harlan. "I'd like to keep one on the surface alive if we can make that work. But the ones in the crack, I'd like to be dead." They knew too much. They had seen too much. Everything else was a diversion. Even Harlan was a diversion. They might want me dead, but what they really wanted was the ship, which they had found out about by currently unknown means. "Fire at will," Jolene said.
"That'll make the toxic crack rats happy. Dinner coming up, ratties. Port weapons array, targeting, firing."
I heard the sound of the shots through the watching cat's ears. Felt them hunched down in fear, ears pressing close to their skulls, eyes staring at the remaining humans, who were shouting, leaning over the edge of the crack, slapping their comms equipment. Back to the vision of Tufts as seen from behind me. She was sitting on my knees, nose pressed to mine, her front feet in my blood, her nose covered in it. She licked the skin below my nose, and it was a tasting moment, not a bonding moment. That view swung from cat to cat until I knew where each of the other three cats in the Sun Star was sitting. All behind me, most of the visuals coming from Notch. My visuals swung around from cat to cat as Tufts touched base with each member of her current clouder and with the other pride leaners outside the Sun Star. It was disorienting, more intense than motion sickness, a bilious, queasy, upside-down and backward sensation that made using Mateo's screen seem like child's play. She made a soft breath of amusement. "You know the cats are eating the man at the front door," Jaeger drawled. "He's dead, right?" "Yeah, so?" "He's good protein and moisture for desert predators and scavengers. Long as you don't expect me to eat him." "You won't be here long enough to get that hungry," I said, pulling away from Tuff's nose. I thought my way back through the screens, to the edge of the crack where the two remaining humans had backed away and were trying to confer with the invaders up front. Unsuccessfully, suddenly. I directed the RVAC to the front of the property and divided my attention to see a new vehicle out in the road. A massive war machine like a huge tactical vehicle. A truck that was brought up on steroids and devil milk and growth hormones, and then had a growth spurt. That sucker was big. It had to be a late model, heavily modified mammoth tactical vehicle with weapons and armor and a crap ton of shielding. It was pulling the damaged, lighter weight vehicles free of the tread spikes. If it wasn't stolen, the MTV was evidence that my attackers had military and gov contacts. To the side of the road, a man stood, visible in silhouette, hip shot. Sucking on a vape, tiny clouds escaping his nose and mouth as the desert night sucked the heat from the air. This guy was smaller than Bearded Guy had been. Compact, wiry. Low-light vision showed his hard hands and knobby, swollen joints. Black hair and a full black beard that fell to his chest. A single tuft of white ran through the beard at the center of his lower lip. Every bit of skin I could see was tattooed, including his face. Dark blue teardrops under both eyes like dual fountains. Enemies killed on one cheek, enemies hurt on the other. Jagged dark blue lines rose like lightning from his left eyebrow to his hairline. I had no idea what they meant. Red lines ran along the fingers of his left hand. A slim foot extended from the mammoth TAC-V. The rest of her slithered out and she dropped to the ground, a controlled fall down a meter and a half, slightly less than her own height, to the stone. She landed like a gymnast, knees bent, arms loose, and stood. She strolled over to the tatted vapor. She took his pipe, put it to her lips, and puffed several times. His body language suggested that he was pleased. They weren't wearing comms systems, so I couldn't listen in on their chatter. "Tufts, can you get a cat in there?"
"Say what?"
Jaeger asked. Bugger. The office camera was way back, too far for me to have seen the woman. "Can you see in there, make out that woman, the one who just jumped from the troop transport?"
"Got a glimpse. How did you see?"
"You've been with the OMW a while," I interrupted. "Tell me you don't know your enemies, who I believe are those people." I was being less than subtle when I suggested,
"I'm just a little junkyard receptionist.
They appeared after you got here. They followed you in. I pushed a little, a very, very little with my blood. You put me in danger. You think they... He stopped. They followed me, he agreed easily, because the timeline worked. I know some of them. The guy I took out at the office front airlock was Rickard Cotter, number 3 in the Angels. The woman. He went silent. I watched the woman and the vapor on camera. There was something personal, intimate, way more than friendly, between the two. Even in the dim light, he appeared to lean into her, to mirror her movements. I opened a screen to watch Jaeger's face as he watched the couple out front while also skimming through his morphin. He was looking at photos and documents, his expression faintly perplexed. The set of his jaw said he wasn't going to tell me whatever he was thinking or looking for. You don't have to tell me, I said, agreeing with his thoughts. I understand. There are things an enforcer knows and never speaks about. Ever. Military intel, unproven intel, gossip and lies. But. I let my voice go slow and soft. You did bring them here. Which left off any mention of Harlan, who arrived first, before Jaeger, but still. The suggestions were enough and might even be too much if he realized he was being influenced. Jaeger said, I have a report of a badly scarred woman who joined the Angels as an old lady, 6+ years ago, riding with a newly made man. The guy with her on screen, moniker One-Eyed Jack. My heart thundered through me. The breath I took hurt. One-Eyed Jack had shot Harlan. His note said so, the note addressed to me, which he'd written after he sealed himself into the Tesla. Jaeger said, One-Eyed Jack bears a striking resemblance to. He stopped. He was flipping back and forth from picture to picture, the office camera set too far behind him for me to see his pics clearly. His tears gathered in my eyes. The tattooed man with the black and white beard had killed Harlan, my friend. Jaeger studied several pics, his eyes going back and forth from his morphin to the screen where the woman in the vapor stood. Yeah, yeah, he muttered. I have a feeling that's a woman who died, officially, that is, over 7 years ago. Clarice Warhammer. You mean like, hello, Clarice, are the lambs screaming? I paraphrased. Pardon me as I have some liver, fava beans, and Chianti? From that old movie. And Warhammer? Not a real name. If she's who I think she is, the names were assigned by the military and appear on at least one set of her official IDs. She's real. She's also listed as presumed dead by the military, and it appears she's also number 2 in the Angels, a female made man, listed in their contacts as C.L. Warhammer. But, if I'm right, she had a lot of nanoplas work done to restore her features. The woman out front looks like she did before she was wounded. Jaeger's statements covered a lot of overlapping, contrary possibilities, things I'd think through later if we survived this. On the office camera, 2 junkyard cats leaped smoothly to the back of Jaeger's chair and reclined, watching everything he did, which was weird, but not weirder than anything else that was happening. On the office screen, the woman gestured to the office in the distance, but spoke too softly to be overheard on the property's security sensors. One-Eyed Jack, the vapor, put an arm around her shoulders, a companionable gesture rather than a claiming one. It was odd. Women in the OMW and in the Angels tended to be viewed as possessions, not equals. They were exceptions, and the war had changed things. Little mama and little girl had proven that. But we had been the rarities.
I get that she's a female-made man, but a woman is number two in the angels, I clarified. She took that spot 2 years ago. She fought her way up, taking out a line of made men in personal combat. Augmented? To hell and back, Jaeger said, his eyes on his morphine scanning documents. Yeah, here it is. Augmented by the military, trained and used extensively as an assassin, under another name in another life. When the war ended, she proved too violent and uncontrolled to follow orders. So she was tossed out on her butt, along with thousands of warriors like her. No money, no usable skills, no temperament for civilian life. Instead of trying to integrate as a citizen, she hit the road. Killed 3 civilians when a mom-and-pop power station refused to provide free power for her stolen vehicle. Military tractor found her and jailed her in a Class 5 disciplinary barracks. That was 7 years ago. After less than 6 months, she busted out, killing a number of guards and destroying a significant section of the prison's physical structure. There was a vid of her taken off with several wounded, kidnapped guards. She was so badly injured that they figured she had died of her wounds. But Jaeger went back to skimming photos. A Class 5 disciplinary barracks meant an underground prison with no access to surface, except through a lot of heavily armed guards and sealed-off sectors. Escape-proof. I watched the woman move. There was something odd about her weight transfers and muscle shifts, something controlled, utterly self-assured, like a spider in the center of her web waiting for prey. She puffed several more times on the vape and handed it back to One-Eyed. One-Eyed Jack bears a striking resemblance to one of the injured, kidnapped, missing prison guards, Jack Sayer. Makes sense. She had to have inside help. But he shook his head, swiping through more pics, putting some up on the screen. This attack squad has top-of-the-line military equipment. He was just now coming to the same possibilities I had. I asked, could she have parlayed her position in the Angels to get government contracts, say, with someone from before her prison days, someone who didn't disappear, who moved up in the military or the gov? Maybe she used that shared past to blackmail or forge a relationship. Maybe she got in with General Irvin E. McKelvey, aiming to replace the OMW and contract with the military, a sub rosa agreement, made while the Angels also forged an agreement with PRC. He cursed, a single harsh expletive. Might explain a lot of things. On screen, the mammoth vehicle pulled the mini-tank and the first of the trapped lightweight TACVs out of the drive. Within minutes, the next two were out of the drive and the entrance was wide open. One-Eyed Jack and Clarice were standing just out of direct line of fire from the road, around the curve of the armored cement embankments that protected the office. Closer in, the cats were feasting on the dead humans. The office's fixed array has anti-tank missiles, I said to Jaeger, knowing I was giving away too much. Gomez, Jaeger is in the comm seat. He's my temporary third in command, authorized for the office's U.S. Allied defensive measures for the next 12 hours. That order removed Jaeger from command of the other weapons in the office, but still gave him control of way more than I wanted him to know about. I'll be in the yard itself. Jaeger is authorized to monitor my suit sensors. Jaeger is not authorized for control of or tracking of the warbot or its sensors. Gomez, assess intruders and prepare optimal responses for military incursion. Fire upon Jaeger's orders.
What about me, Sweet Pea?
Jolene asked on a private channel. You are reserve forces. Optional responses for military incursion, Jaeger repeated. What kind of AI and systems do you have on this thing? It's been heavily retrofitted. If we live through this, I might share, I lied. What are you going to do? Jaeger asked me. Why will you be in the open? I'm going after Mateo, and I'm going after 2 intruders at the back of the property, who got in when we weren't looking. and I was going to drop the two prisoners who were still hanging under the grabber. If their brains weren't totally scrambled, I was going to ask them some pointed and not very nice questions.
Copy that. Be careful,
Jaeger said.
Gomez AI, glad to make your acquaintance.
Welcome, Jaeger, Gomez said. I have prepared four responses, each containing offensive and defensive measures and potential bombardment progressions, all based on the intruders' armaments we now believe to be in play. We are aware that the intruders may have armaments that differ from our expectations, and therefore, each version has additional options as needed. Please note options 1 through 4 on my on-deck screen.
I could almost feel Jaeger's surprise through the screens and through the cats. No junkyard should have such sophisticated weaponry.
That AI's smarter than I thought,
Jolene said into my ear, speaking of Gomez.
Smart is sexy.
Listening with half an ear, I pulled back from the Sunstar's screens and found Tuff's face up against mine, cross-eyed close. She was also inside my brain, showing me pictures of Mateo. His warbot suit was quivering very slightly. Two cats were sitting on top of his chest, heads tilting back and forth, ear tabs flicking, eyes on the suit, as if listening to something inside. The vision shifted to the grabber where two people were dangling 3 meters off the ground. One was singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. The other was crying softly and calling for his mama. Both were signs of prolonged exposure to WIMP anti-grav tech. It was too late to get anything useful from them. The vision shifted again, this time to the crack. One person remained on the edge, holding a rope that indicated a lot of tension and movement. The other person was probably down in the crack, checking on the ones Jolene had shot. I needed to stop the invaders, just stop them, not kill them. I needed intel and info, and I needed to protect the office, and the Sunstar, and Mateo, whether I trusted him now or not, and I needed to do something about the puffers. If Mateo had been able to stop them inside his suit, he'd already be back in action. There was no way I'd be able to do all that. No matter what I did next, my life as I knew it for the last few years was probably over. If I killed Jaeger, I'd have to run again. If I left any angels alive, I'd have to run again. And if I used my best weapons to stop and kill them, the satellites might register the energies, and I'd have to blow up the scrapyard and still have to run again. Which sucked. My vision shifted. I was seeing my own face, my funky, bright, reddish gold irises looking into my own eyes, Tuff's eyes. My brain reeled. I closed my eyes and held very, very still to fight off the vertigo, now seeing my closed eyes through the cat's. Tuff's nose butted me. What? I asked her. Mentally, she showed me a water bowl, showed me a food bowl full of scraps and kibble, showed me a bowl of goat milk, and a vision of the dead man being fed on by a dozen cats. Rickard Cotter, number 3 in the Angels, dead. And a woman farther out also being eaten. The two dead bodies in the back airlock, and then the dead bodies in the entrance drive. Two cats were feeding on one of them. In the distance, the cats smelled coy wolves, the feral half-breed species patiently waiting for the humans to leave so they could get to the dead. Or attack the cats. Or both. Lastly, there was a vision of a cat, sitting inside the mammoth, up on the dash, staring out at the feeding cats and dead humans. Is that one of yours? I asked. Cat of ours, the concept came back. Cat was a thought that conveyed a sneaky, savvy, smart fighter, a female warrior cat. The thought ours contained a series of relationship parameters, successful military maneuvers that resulted in dead rats brought to the pride for protein, and bloodlines that I couldn't follow, except to gather that the cat was probably Tuff's great-great-great-granddaughter, and Tufts was proud of her. She got the driver to let her in, I guessed. Tufts made a satisfied sound that was sort of like,
"Hum."
She knows what they're saying, what they're planning.
"Hum."
"And without me, you don't get water and food and goat milk, and we make a good team."
"Hum."
"So you're telling me to keep fighting and we'll go on as before. But I have to tell you, Tufts, we might not be able to do that." Tufts sent me a vision of the mammoth TAC-V full of cat food, cats, Mateo, and me, driving off into the distance. I laughed. It was such a strange sound, I hardly recognized it. I couldn't really say when I had last laughed freely. "Okay, I'll keep it in mind," I said, the unfamiliar grin on my face.
"You do know that talking to yourself is a sure sign of insanity, don't you?"
Jolene said.
"Yeah, I do. I need my arm back." "How long will it take you to heal the damage and be able to use it again?"
Jolene asked. "It'll be a while. I'll raid a medical supplies locker for bandages and a sling."
"Really? That's your plan?"
Jolene said. But she released the command sleeve. Needles slid from my flesh, ripping clotted blood from the hundreds of minuscule wounds, clots that had slowed the bleeding. The pain was like lightning and ice and fire and sharp blades and salt, so bad I forgot to breathe. The faint hum of a decontamination feature went into effect, a feeling against my shoulder. A half-buzz, half-high-pitched drilling noise. My arm slid out and flopped in my lap, pain like I'd been flayed thrummed through me. I was scared to look at it. Jolene said,
"Yeah, you're all badass, I can see that. And you're gonna take on the bad guys single-handedly, ain't ya?"
When I could breathe again, I looked down. I had fallen forward against the comm sleeve. My hand was in my lap. My armor was off up to a space above my elbow. From fingertips to the edge of the remaining armor, I was skinless, bloodied and leaking, the pain so cold and sharp and intense that even breathing was a torture.
"Ha ha," I whispered. "What's funny?"
Jolene asked.
"Single-handedly?"
"Oh," she said.
"That was funny. I'm programmed for humor. Mateo doesn't let me use it often."
Mateo, her CO, who was brain damaged. That had to have been awful for her all these years, alone, semi-sentient, with no one to talk to. Which I must have mumbled aloud.
"What do you mean, semi-sentient? I have you know I've evolved way beyond my original programming, darling. I left Kate behind more than 4 standard years ago. I can give you the exact day I evolved if you want."
When I didn't answer, she said,
"Huh,"
sounding disgusted.
"There's an emergency med bay to your right. The blue vertical lights. It's sized for the chief engineer, but I can modify it to fit you. If you step inside, it'll fix you up enough to survive and fight for a while. It usually gives the chief engineer or the last man aboard 24 hours of extra life."
I looked at the glowing blue lines and realized it was an upright coffin-shaped closet, about 2.5 meters tall and 1 meter wide. As I watched, 2 doors unsealed and swept back. The inside was a standard med bay, except it was formed for standing upright. I popped the safety straps away and tried to rise from the command seat. A puddle of half-clotted blood ran down my legs, splashed on the floor, splattered everywhere. Had to be a couple liters at least. Too much to lose and still fight. All 4 cats raced to lap up the protein. "Erp," was all I managed. Then the world tilted, spun. I was falling inside the med bay. Everything went black. The med bay door opened and I dropped, boneless, onto the engineering command floor. I knew I had fallen because my cheek was on the cold hemp plaz tile, half of it having dropped from the ceiling, and three cats were in front of me, noses nearly touching mine. "Hey," I said, mostly to the cats. "That was weird."
That was 27 minutes, 46 seconds of IVs, healing lasers, topical blood clotting chemicals, two syringes of Plaskin, four layers of Invisodermis, and enough time-release chems and steroids to let you beat an augmented prize fighter in a...
Stop, I managed. She did.
Tufts, you still here?
Tufts shoved the other cats aside, including Notch, who was twice as big as her and twice as mean, or so I had thought. He gave way to the guardian cat.
Show me Jagger. Then the invading vehicles and people out front.